Welcome, everyone, to this interview, where I'm really pleased to be bringing a conversation with Jessica Britt. This is one of my, I shouldn't say this, one of my favorite interviews of the conference. So I think it's a really important one because we're talking about some of the really extreme experiences that can happen in trauma, but from a lens, from a different lens, from a lens of a spiritual path. And really how whatever's happened to us, there is a place in us that is untouched by that. And I think that's a very important message. To say a little bit about Jessica, Jessica Britt has been a spiritual teacher and training director of the Diamond Approach since 1985. In the 1970s, she specialized in the field of childhood sexual and physical abuse. And she mentioned to me before we started recording, she ran the first ever workshop on trauma at the Esalen Institute, which is sort of one of the most important locations hosting self-development workshops really in history. So, you know, this is right back in the 70s. And the 80s saw her on the Gestalt staff at Esalen, where she initiated groups for adults with childhood abuse. In her decades of inner work, she has gained a unique perspective on the impacts of trauma on the spiritual journey and its practices. So, Jessica, welcome. I'm really looking forward to having some time to explore together, and I appreciate that you making the time.
Oh, you're welcome, Alex. It's my pleasure, actually.
So we were just having a conversation before we started recording, and you were sharing with me some of your background and work with trauma, really before trauma was anywhere near being in the zeitgeist of conversation like it has become in recent time. I'd love you to say a little bit about what brought you to working with trauma and some of those early experiences.
Just as you asked me the question now, in the moment, the most amazing memory just came into my consciousness. I'm very touched by, actually. I feel very touched by it. So my background is like so many people on the planet, regrettably. There was a lot of abusive trauma in my early childhood. Coming from New York, I basically say I grew up in an X-rated childhood. And long story short, I went into nursing and I specialized in pediatric nursing and psychiatric nursing with kids. So I saw a lot of children with a lot of trauma, which stimulated inside of me a recognition I needed to go into therapy. So this was in my early 20s. And I was working with a therapist and telling my history. And this is like in the 1970s. And he's writing notes and I'm sitting there. And he says to me, "You're telling me the most horrific things as if you're telling me about the weather." Mm-hmm. When he said those words, first of all, I was like startled, because it was actually a human being sensitively present with me. And it kind of woke, you know, it kind of shattered, not shattered, that's too strong of a word. It woke up something inside of myself that I had a subtle young woman's recognition of how far away I was from myself. And so in that movement, in my continued early therapy, I did a, you know, tremendous amount of work on my historical self and worked in the field. And over time, there was tremendous understanding, tremendous healing, and a kind of organization of my history, because a lot of people with trauma histories, their histories are chaotic. So I'd say the verbal therapy gave me organization of my history. And then I ended up doing a form of work called Gestalt therapy, which is, I was blessed to work with a man named Dick Price and his wife, Chris Price. Again, this is back in the 70s, 80s. And I learned to start having feelings because I was quite frozen and dissociated. And that was a whole journey, you know, learning to cry, be angry, you know, all the things that we were famous for in the 70s and early 80s. Anyway, and at that time, I wanted to work with a Reikian therapist because I was living in the Bay Area. Don't ask me how I ended up with a man named that we know as Hamid Ali. And he was doing Reikian work. He hadn't even started his school yet of the Diamond Approach. And I started working with him and noticing that my emotions, if I didn't just, he had a point of view that opened up my emotional body into spiritual qualities. Like we were talking about it earlier, like through his guidance and our particular approach, as my somatic experience was opening up with the breath work, and I was allowing myself to have certain sensations, certain feelings, like pain, crying. And there was a way his presence was so quiet. And then he'd have me sense into it really deeply. And then a kind of compassion or loving kindness literally started arising from within me that was so amazing that I began to understand a kind of inner alchemy that involved the body, the individual consciousness, the historical part of myself, started waking up in a certain way. And I got very turned on because I'm still working as a psychiatric nurse in these days, right? Though I was doing the teacher training with Hamid, that I started feeling like, oh, there's something here about supporting a person entering into their most painful trauma layer with fellow people to create a holding environment that brought them in a certain way, had the potential to bring a person back to their basic goodness.
And that is sometimes a very difficult thing to do, right? To turn towards the place that we've often spent much of our energy trying to either shut down or to actively move away from. It's interesting what you say, though, because I think often people think about feeling trauma or feeling feelings so we can get rid of them. But you're saying something slightly different here, that the feeling of it actually has the potential for something else.
Absolutely. Right. And one of the things, and we were talking about it earlier, the gift of a spiritual, adding the spiritual dimension into any kind of inner work, psychological work, trauma work, but inner work, but bringing that lens, one, first of all, can begin to recognize that everything about ourselves is included in true nature. That's a very profound nugget. Like there's, like, you know, the Christian tradition says, you know, Christ said, you know, you are the light. I mean, all the traditions point to the fact that who and what we are is not a mistake. And one of the biggest hurts about trauma, childhood trauma, physical trauma, sexual trauma, emotional abuse and shaming, is that a young being that is such a, any of you sat with a newborn, I mean, purity, goodness, sweetness, wonderfulness, right? That being could end up by age 13 or whatever, age 5, feeling shame, worthlessness, badness, and that their original goodness is just an echo inside of themselves. And for many people, it's totally split off. Some people, it's an echo, right? And so one of the things that spiritual work points to is that echo, that original goodness, is never destroyed. That's an intellectual piece of information, that to begin to feel it takes tremendous practice, because it takes a certain kind of holding environment to go inside and to slowly learn to tolerate. Peter Levine talks about this beautifully, the titration. That is like such a gift that he brought into the conversation. Titrating, learning to re-feel, to kind of defrost oneself from the trauma, to come back here, takes a community, which is Thomas is talking about, takes certain kind of practices, and it takes a certain kind of passion within our own individual souls to want the truth.
I want to track back to this point around our original purity or goodness or true nature not being tainted or destroyed, or because I think that particularly when there's more serious childhood abuse, for example, one of the feelings that people can be left with is that somehow they've been tainted or they've been dirtied or they've been changed by that experience. And that is part of the impact, in a sense, because I think that the fear is then that I will never be the same again because of how I've been impacted by this experience. So I'd love you to unpack this a bit more, because I think that's something that's very beautiful in what you said, and I think it's an important message.
It's probably the most powerful, touching message, actually. One has to consider that rumor, like I think of the Dalai Lama, you know, and the basic goodness, or Desmond Tutu, and those two get together, right? And they're so full of goodness.
It's infectious when those two get together. It's infectious when those two get together, right?
But why? Why? You see, they just radiate this joy and this goodness. And both those men have witnessed tremendous trauma.
Yeah.
Up close and personal, what they must feel, you know. So that original goodness, right? So here's the challenge. And it was very beautiful hearing you talk about the services you're offering. Every one of us who are in this field of inner work and healing, whether the collective or the individual, each one of us hold a very important piece, because it takes a village to really unpack and alchemize and digest the trauma to discover the original goodness. So spiritual teachings have powerful message. There is original goodness. Most people with trauma history, they're hoping that that's true. You know, they're very suspicious. Like, well, maybe for you, but not me, right? So it takes a certain kind of inner psychological work. It takes a recognition of all self-reference. So I really learned to sense my body. It was a long path to sense my body, to come back in, to have my emotions. And then I realized something in me was still not satisfied. I don't know how to explain it. In our work, we call it the flame, you know, the flame for the truth, right? Something in me just wasn't satisfied. But one of the things that's important with each stage we take, each capacity we gain, oh, I can feel a little more. I get a little more confident. I feel a little bit more goodness. I have more positivity in my life. You see, gives me more courage. A deeper pain might arise as the resources are building. That's part of that titration thing. Eventually, there are some very deep kinesthetic soul wounds. There's no other way to speak about them. That deep practice, commitment, support allows an individual to begin to feel, because they're getting more courage as they're going through the inner journey. And at the root of our consciousness, our original purity is absolutely there, indestructible. It's just for an individual to feel that and go, oh my God, look. Now, most of us have that feeling like we developed a strong armor and defenses. I'm not going to let them get to me. We have the part that feels like, boy, they really got to me. But inside of that, there's a place like, they didn't get to me. The kid has that feeling. Beneath that, there's a deep truth that that original essence that all spiritual teachings talk about is indestructible. That the history is conditioned, that trauma makes a very deep impression. I mean, clearly it does. But it's not an impression that changes the DNA of the soul. It doesn't get into the deep matrix of the basic mystery and goodness of who and what we are. And to just taste that for a moment is so transformative. It's just kind of like it's a Geiger counter. And then you begin to recognize, oh, that's what's moving me. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, that's why people take, why are people signing up for your conferences? Partly is they want to learn how to work with people, do a little bit of healing, but there's a deeper thing that's moving. And if one can begin to recognize this deep inner movement, it gets actually very exciting.
It does. I think there's something that's very important and very beautiful in what you're saying. I think what's sometimes really hard is, going back to what you were saying a little bit earlier, that the journey to that place is a journey of turning towards one suffering, not away from it. And of course, often the last place we want to go is towards, because it was too overwhelming at the time, and that's why we're trying to move away from. And so I'm curious as to what supports one in that turning towards. What helps somebody who's perhaps almost built their life around strategies to move away from, mm-hmm. To turn and look towards and to open up to?
Well, again, it takes many things, actually. As I think of the different speakers that you have and how each one of them, you know, bring a certain element, you know, to address I'll start this way. I want to slow it down. First, it's recognizing that there is a force in us that wants to feel better. There is a profound existential question in most human beings. What is the meaning of all of this? What is the meaning of suffering? How am I going to deal with my suffering? Just like you said. And most people go, the vast majority of people go the conventional route. They shut down. They don't want to feel. And they try to solve their suffering issue externally. Drugs, sex, rock and roll, money in the bank, 2.5 children, 2 cars, you know, or just have enough food on the table is a huge, and a full belly for so many people on the planet is a huge accomplishment. Right? Now, for a reason I can't explain, there's some people that are moved to go a little further, and they end up doing psychological work. They end up recognizing all my relationships end up poorly. It might have something to do with my background. And they'll go into therapy. Fantastic. And they actually have better relationships. And then some people, the better relationship, but there's something else. And so some people go, they want a better sex life. And they go, I'm having an okay heart relationship, but the sex, I wonder if it has anything to do with the trauma in my life. And they might go get some body work or start doing some physical therapy. You see so our own inner desire actually leads the way of how we solve it. And our divine dissatisfaction encourages us to take another step, right? Now, for some people, the feeling or what I call the flame, just keeps them moving. And then they hear rumors, you know, the spiritual rumors, you know, true nature, it's all one and loving. And then they decide to go do some practices, spiritual practices. They find a spiritual teacher they really like. And for some people, I'm going to use meditation as an example. Sitting in meditation is like heaven, right? They just sit there. And I call these people, I'm not one of these people. I had to go do dance. I could tell you some funny stories about my original meditation because of the trauma in my history. Now, some people with trauma history, sitting meditation is like a refuge. They go in, they know how to get very still. And it's like returning to the place where they couldn't get touched. And they love to meditate. Other people with trauma, I was one of those people, made me a target. So the, you know, the guru, the teacher, meditation teacher says, okay, bring your awareness down into your belly center, you know, horror, Koth by all its names. And your usual sense of self is like panicking, like, get me out of here. Right. So if you can begin to appreciate that there's a longing for a practice, and recognizing that some practices will be a challenge for you, depending on your history, can support your being more kind towards yourself about it versus giving yourself a spiritual inner critic attack, right? And it might be like, I was in a body cast as a child. So to sit me down, you know, and I was actually working with Hamid at the time, and I went to a 2-week meditation thing, not with me, with actually Jack Kornfield. This was back in the 70s, I can't remember, and or 80s. And it was like I was a prisoner of war. Just sit me down. I was crying, and it was too fast for me. And then we realized I needed to open up my body trauma around the body cast because I felt so trapped. Now, so for me, movement and dance and yoga was a much more supportive path. So in a certain way, we have to recognize what helps us be with ourselves. Right? Now I love to meditate. And there's a part of me that prefers movement practices. And so it's also to recognize, where is your soul moving you? Right? And in a certain way, I just realized, is to kind of come to trust yourself. Right? To really begin to feel and trust your own inner call, your own inner, and we all take outer direction to begin with. I mean, we do need pointers, right? In a certain way, each person who's, you know, listening to this conference, of all the wonderful guests you're going to have, they're going to respond to, oh, that's the right thing for me right now, and to learn to trust that. And to also that there's this kind of inner movement inside ourselves that is wants to support us to return and to know our original purity, actually.
Well, it's also what I think is important in what you're saying as well, is that where something feels particularly difficult, there's also wisdom in that, right? Like you're describing your experience of sitting to meditate and there being an inner no to that or an inner resistance to that. And it wasn't that, oh, well, I'm just going to give up, but I said, well, how else do I work with this? Or what does this place in me actually need to help support it? And there's something about that kind of relationship with one's own experience and that's an unfolding thing.
Absolutely. You said it really beautifully, right? And the other thing I would just add to what you just said, this is where our own inner integrity comes in. Yes, and I'm totally, and finally that I said it, agree with you, to listen and to let ourselves move, but to also recognize if I had totally stopped meditating, I would also be avoiding something.
Yeah.
But also to recognize, oh, I'm having a particularly hard time. Oh, I do feel trapped. It did bring up feelings about being in the body cast. So then in my inner work with my therapist and or Hermit or whoever you're working with, to let yourself inquire into the wound or the defense that's afraid to meditate, like Jessica, to sit here and meditate, you're actually not in a body cast. So to have, in a certain way, to have the right balance between inquiring into the resistance of the practice that has a certain importance and to let yourself go dance and move and do yoga.
Yes. But this, it also strikes me though, that there's something around knowing where that working edge is and not trying to force through it, but also not hiding away from it. And I think particularly when one's boundaries have been violated as part of the wounds in the first place, it's sometimes difficult to respect one's own edges and to even be attuned to where they are. And I'm curious as to what, in working with students, what you notice helps them to find that, to find their edge and then to honor it.
A beautiful question. Well, of course, first of all, is to support the person respecting their conflict, to de-shame it, because most people will experience that conflict as a limitation. I should be able to do this. And well, actually, all spiritual teachings and most therapists and the Diamond Approach want to encourage the person. Well, let's see what happens if you just let yourself feel it for a moment. Let's try to understand this battle inside yourself. What does, well, I'll use meditation. What does meditation mean to you? What does it mean to you to sit still? Let's let the free association and let the soul reveal what it's trying to work out. So that's like, you know, number one is let's hear the story. Because a lot of times in trauma, what I notice is that there's a lot of, besides all the mental stuff that goes on, which, you know, there's a lot of body stuff that goes on, the way, the holding of the breath. And if I do an exhale, I'll land more in my belly. So I'm trying to hold myself up, because if I land on my belly, I'll feel my genitals. I mean, there's so many dialogues. So to just make room, well, let's hear what's trying to be expressed here. And to really honor that.
I feel like part of what we're touching into is the role of inquiry. So maybe you want to say a few words around just briefly what that practice is, but also how that can help us explore those places.
Yeah. Just trying to, so much could be said, and obviously I'm a talker. Once I got defrosted and things started really moving, it's hard to.
Well, I ask you a question that, of course, could be many week long retreats to answer. I realize I've just thrown you a slightly tricky one. So.
Well, I hear Ram Dass's voice, be here now. So it's inquiry from the Diamond Approach perspective, in a certain way, builds on a deep tradition of really being here now and recognizes that that now is not some future idealized place. That the now is literally whatever you are experiencing in this moment. And that there's a recognition that there's kind of mental thought experience, there's heart experience, there's kinesthetic body experience. So in inquiry, we want to build a person's capacity to actually land in their experience recognize it, whatever it is, whether it's mental content, these are the thoughts I'm having, these are the emotions I'm having, these are the sensations I'm having. And while landing in it, or just being where you are, is like we like to say, that the soul's natural curiosity, well, what's going on here? Let's not just mentally understand it, but let's just see what these feelings are. That the soul itself has a dynamism that wants to tell its story, it wants to express. But we usually don't take the time to actually be with what we're really experiencing. And so that's like the first step. And there is in the soul, though, for some people with trauma, it's a challenge. We do have a natural curiosity. And sometimes our curiosity is dulled because of the trauma. We're told not to look, don't see, don't feel. So part of the practice is in a certain way to reawaken our natural movement to be curious. We are curious, inquiring beings. I mean, there's a rumor that true nature is the ultimate inquirer. I wonder what happens.
It's a good rumor.
Right. You know, so that there's a kind of, if we open up the inquiring consciousness through the mind, the feelings, and the belly, and give permission to listen, to feel, to look, to be present with, the natural healing movement of the soul will move. And then people do breath work, helps activate that movement, dance, yoga. Reality is very curious most of the time, isn't it?
It is. What also comes to my mind, Jessica, as you're talking there, is that I think often when one starts to open towards their suffering and their trauma, it often can feel like we don't have what it takes to do it. Like we don't have the capacity or the courage or the whatever it may be to do it. And what I think is important in what you're saying as well is that as we do the healing work, what you're speaking to is we also start to awaken parts of ourselves or unlock, different words we could use, but capacities become available as that journey happens. And so maybe you could say a few words about how once we get some movement, that maybe some of the material we face gets harder, but also our capacity to meet it also grows.
Well, you said it. It's true. That rumor is true. That, I mean, that's certainly been my experience. It's probably been your experience. Some part in you is really inspired to hold these conferences, right? Now, I think what's important to say is what you're saying is true. Like the soul, our consciousness has a potential, and there is a maturation process. So like as an infant, we start off on our backs, right? And there's a movement that gets us to turn, and then the muscles develop and we go to the crawling and the standing. And there's this natural movement or a flower blooming. The healing process is like that, right? That there's a movement, and then let's say a bud starts moving in us, and we get the support we need. It needs tremendous external, and needs lots of good gardeners around us, right? That know, oh, well, slow down here a little bit. That, you know, that whole titration principle that Peter is so beautiful with. So that over time, in the metabolizing, and oh, look, I can actually stand. Oh, I actually can cry, and I'm not drowning in it, even though I felt like I was drowning in it. I'm actually quite okay inside of here. Wow. Our natural presence starts arising. I can remember I've seen this in people like around anger. Anger is a big one, right? Oh, if I feel my anger, you know, I'm going to murder someone. And you start feeling the anger with support and the heat of it. And slowly you can't help but notice inside, well, I am angry. I'm feeling angry, but I'm not the anger. We start feeling something just naturally starts popping up inside, you know, goes, oh, and that's part of that door to the original purity, right? And then and if I let myself feel the anger in the right circumstances, I actually feel a little stronger. I actually, oh, there is an objective no inside of here. Do you see it? It's like it's a kind of growth and development process, actually, of the soul. And in a certain way, to recognize, and this is an important thing, that all the things we call our limitations, our defenses, and all those kinds of things, they really are an incredible cocoon that has protected us through our childhood to get us so far, and that we each have a certain kind of call that we'll respond to. I mean, this is the hard, actually, I just realized the hardest thing about everything we're talking about is comparison mind. That my journey through my trauma, my journey to rediscovering my spiritual nature is unlike anybody else's. So even as we're having this kind of very supportive conversation and hopefully inspiring conversation, it's so important to recognize, and it's very moving to me, that each person has a different destiny about which part of the digestion process is theirs to do. Do you know what I mean?
I think, what also strikes me about that is that that comparing mind also is part of the reason why we can feel so alone and feel so lonely on the journey. And there's something about what you're saying around, although our experiences or our the exact nuance and flavor of what's happening may be different, we're also very deeply connected.
Well, I realize it's I don't talk about these things so often. And so I talking with you, I again feel very moved with a particular memory. One of the reasons I was motivated to do some workshops at Esalen, I think I called it, I actually don't remember what I called it, but it was for adults with childhood abuse, was I could feel that being in a holding environment of like souls and to begin to share the stories broke through that loneliness in a certain way. Right? That, I'm just having, anyway, a memory. So there was a group that, and we met a couple of years in a row, same people. And it was, I had the group for men and women. And I used to do it by myself. And then I started doing it with a male co-leader, which was very useful and really had men and women in the space. And we used to, one of the women came up with these signs that said camp incest, right? Now, we all laughed, but we also recognized if anybody else had done it, other than the woman who did it, we would have killed. No, because we like, do you know what I mean? It was like, and so that kind of community support, you know, is inspiring to share the pain, but also over time, you really do start learning. The other phrase I love is the iron that's in the fire the longest becomes the strongest steel. Hmm. So there are many, 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 many beautiful souls on the planet who've digested 50%, 25% of their history, 100% of their history, that, you know, like the Desmond Tutus or the Nelson Mandelas, you know, are very public inspirations, right? But there are many fine beings who have really done this journey. You know, I mean, it would be very interesting actually someday to get all the teachers together to talk about their childhood and what their metabolization process was.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it also strikes me in what you're saying. I know we're starting to run out of time, but it strikes me that I think sometimes the fixation can be on, I have to heal everything, and I don't have a life on the other side until I've dealt with all of this. And I think what's also important in this is that one doesn't have to deal with everything to be whole or to be able to live their life fully.
Oh, beautiful. Well, as I'm feeling into the significance of what you just said, not only that, living your life, right? I mean, if we just feel into living our life, right? So you go to a therapy session or a yoga thing or a meditation retreat, whatever you're called to, and you're inspired or you learn something and you go home and you suddenly see your partner in it from a slightly different point of view. Or you just respond to your child slightly differently, right? Which then gives you fresh new experiences that then you might take back to the therapist, and then something else is seen and understood. And then you go to work and you go, oh my God, you know, I've been judging my colleague just like my father judged me, right? So these insights become lived insights and change who we are in our everyday life, because life, as you were saying, you know, life is inseparable from true nature. You know, there's a rumor, it's true nature who's living this life is one of the rumors, right? And we're one of the divine forms that's, you know. So yes, each person has a very unique karma. There's no question about that. You know, it's part of the multiplicity and the richness of reality that we each have a different destiny, and what is ours to do, what is ours to transform, what is our, and it's not anybody outside of us can't tell us. It does take a deep self-respect and listening to one's capacities and also recognizing one's limits. Like, going, well, this isn't for this lifetime. I'll handle that next lifetime. That's one of the rumors.
I'm mindful we're out of time, but I've enjoyed spreading rumors together. Jessie, can you say a few words about people that want to find out more about you, the Diamond Approach, and want to perhaps explore further from this lens? Where can people go, and what would be some of what they can find?
Well, as a beginning place, and we are in the process of developing another level, that in our, I think it's called Diamond Approach Online, there is a teaching that I did on trauma and spirituality that's available. And out of that teaching, we'll be doing more on the subject of the Diamond Approach. We don't focus on trauma as such, you know, it's its own unique path, etc. But the element of trauma, what I want to bring into the space, like I talked about with the meditation, how trauma can inspire us on the search, and what are some of the limitations that we run across, and how can we deal with them, I think is a very important conversation to reduce the spiritual inner critic, basically. But that's probably a good starting place.
Fantastic. And also maybe worth saying that with the Diamond Approach, these days people can do online groups, they can do retreat groups, they can do weekend groups. There's quite a few different ways that people can find a pathway in.
Yeah. I mean, then there's the whole Ridwan website, the Diamond Approach website, and there's all kinds of groups. I want to be clear, they're not trauma focused, right? They're more the teaching as it is. And we're speaking about it in terms of how it can touch and be relevant for people with traumatic histories. So they're not discouraged, actually.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Wonderful. Jessica, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time today.
Oh, you're welcome.